Anglo-Amalgamated Film Distributors Limited presents. A Peter Rogers production. Carry On Teacher in black and white. Starring Kenneth Connor, Charles Hawtrey, Leslie Phillips, Joan Sims, Kenneth Williams, Hattie Jakes, Rosalind Knight, Cyril Chamberlain, and Ted Ray. With The Saboteurs, Richard O'Sullivan, George Howell, Diana Beavers, Jacqueline Lewis, Roy Hines, Carol White, Jane White, Paul Cole, and Larry Dan. Original screenplay by Norman Hudis. Music composed and directed by Bruce Montgomery. Director of Photography, Reginald Dwyer. Editor, John Shirley. Produced by Peter Rogers. Directed by Gerald Thomas. A caretaker opens the gates of Magdalen Street Secondary Modern School, a drab Victorian building. In the school corridor, as he's ringing the bell, he's barged out of the way by hordes of school kids streaming past. As they flood out of the gates, the dark-haired headmaster, in black academic gown, looks down on them from the upstairs window of his office. He sits down at his desk.
Come in.
A nervous-looking boy enters.
Miss Short told me to report, sir.
Ah, yes, Stevens. Sit down.
Now, what's all this about?
Well, sir, I was lucky about in math lessons, and Miss Short said if I went on, she'd send me to you, and I went on and she sent me, and here I am. Sir.
I see. And what do you think I should do about it?
Cane me?
And split a perfectly good magazine?
Sir?
Remove the padding, Stevens. You're crackling like a pan full of frying bacon. Caning you wouldn't tell me why you think it more important to lark about than attend to your lessons, would it?
No, sir.
I'd like to know. Go home and write me a letter about it.
Yes, sir.
Well, yeah. He ushers him out.
Staff meeting on a Friday evening.
Naturally, when our resistance is at its lowest.
Stevens, what are you hanging about here for?
Nothing, Miss Short.
Then cut along.
The stout woman in gown and mortarboard watches as he hurries off down the corridor, but doesn't notice him hide round a corner. She enters the staff room.
It's time, Mr. Adams. Had you forgotten?
Forgotten? Me? Forgotten what?
Mr. Wakefield's meeting.
Any idea what the meeting's about?
Discipline, I hope. It's high time Wakefield gave his jaw a rest and his right arm some exercise.
Stephen starts back to his hiding place as he sees another teacher heading for the headmaster's office. Once they're all safely inside, he listens at the door.
Sorry I'm late.
Ladies, gentlemen, as you know, I came here to Magdalen Street straight from training college. I've been here 20 years. 7 years as assistant headmaster, and one term, this term, as acting headmaster during Mr. Carson's illness. I've decided it's time for a change. A brand new school opens next term, not far from where I was born, in the country. They've advertised for a headmaster. If I could get that post, it could hardly be more perfect for me. I intend to apply.
I'm sure we wish we might accept.
Please, just a moment. I need your help. That's why I've called you together. Listen, from the Ministry of Education, the Ministry is currently granting research facilities to Mr. Alistair Grigg, the noted child psychiatrist, in connection with his forthcoming book, contemporary juvenile behavior patterns. With him on his tour of schools is our own official inspector, Miss Felicity Wheeler, who reports direct to us on the standard of pupils' behavior and staff control. This is to inform you that Mr. Grigg and Miss Wheeler will spend the last week of the current term, beginning on Monday next, at your school to fulfill their separate missions.
Mr. Wakefield, sir, he must not come here. That Grigg, he's a lunatic.
I read one of his books once, Free Expression. You know what that means. Sex in the cycle shed.
Really? How disgusting.
What a reactionary lot you are. There's something surely to be said for the psychological approach.
Think of a psychiatrist loose among these children, telling them that mischief is a form of self-expression and crime a complex.
And a ministry inspector, this Wheeler woman with him, reporting on their misbehavior from quite a different angle.
Exactly. It'll spread through the profession like wildfire. The staff control here is non-existent.
And there goes Mr. Wakefield's new job. Poof.
Precisely. The ministry, in killing two birds with one stone, may, with terrible finality, kill my chances as well.
Yes, I suppose there is that to it.
That would be a shame.
Sir, there's only one thing to do to save yourself. Whack!
Extraordinary theory. You bend a child double in order to give it an upright character.
Have you never sent a pupil to the head for caning?
Of course I have, but never without a sense of defeat.
Miss Short, Mr. Milton, let me put you both straight on that score. I don't like caning, ever, except as a last resort. Mr. Grigg is totally opposed to it.
Opposed to it, is he? Hoity-toity. He's obviously never faced a class here. Noxious ninny.
Nevertheless, Mr. Bean, while he's here, caning's out.
Then you're sunk, sir.
Sunk? Oh, no, no, not necessarily.
I thought you were asleep.
Hmm? Oh, just because I don't speak as much as some people do, it doesn't mean to say that I don't do. That I'm not, I mean, after all, he who listens most listens least. We can't hope to avoid trouble in this school. So let's try and keep it away from the visitors as much as possible. How can we do this? By being alert and rallying around Mr. Wakefield. So may I go now, please? I've left my Bunsen burning.
Stevens quickly makes himself scarce as everyone files out of the office. Then, Stevens is sprinting out of the school gates, just as the bewildered caretaker is shutting them. Just as he's about to leave, Mr. Wakefield looks down at the job advertisement on his desk.
If I could get that post, it could hardly be more perfect for me. I intend to apply.
It's just before 9 a.m, and the playground's full of school children. Stevens has a small group listening to him.
Now listen, the plan is when they arrive, we'll go upstairs after them.
The caretaker passes by. He looks at them suspiciously as he makes his way up some steps.
Look out, Alf might get suspicious. Now there's nothing more to tell you now, but just back us up at all times. Now break it up, scatter.
Hello, you lot. Holding a stripe meeting, are you?
We were talking about the local team's disgraceful showing on Saturday, Alf.
Disgraceful? Diabolical, I call it. Do you see the inside right? Muff every single pass?
Here come the two we've got to get rid of.
A car pulls up outside the school gates, and a smartly dressed man and woman get out. Mr. Wakefield's buffeted by children as he walks out to meet them.
Oh, Miss Wheeler, how nice to see you again.
Hello, Mr. Wakefield. This is Mr. Grigg, Charles Carteris.
How do you do?
Welcome, Mr. Grigg. Shall we go inside?
A football hit Mr. Grigg on the back of the head.
1 week, that's all I'd ask.
That's all we've got.
Eh?
Until the end of term. Come on, kids.
Mr. Adams looks at his watch and blows a whistle. He quickly stands aside as hordes of pupils stream past him into the school building. Two girls enter a sports equipment storeroom. While one guards the door, the other finds a pair of white shorts, then compares them to an identical, much smaller pair she brought with her. She swaps them round, then quickly makes her way out with the larger pair. Mr. Wakefield showing the two visitors round.
Well, they say it's always best to start the day with a song. So let's begin our tour of inspection with Mr. Bean's class, shall we? It's through here.
A blonde teacher catches Mr. Griggs' eye as she passes him.
Who's that? Miss Alcock. Miss Alcock.
She heads into the sports room, giving him an arch look.
Ding dong. In addition to taking French and music, Mr. Bean organizes and conducts our school orchestra. We call him our Malcolm Sargent of Magdalen Street.
Doesn't that interfere with her schoolwork at all?
On the contrary, madam. My theory of music teaching is...
Alcock.
I beg your pardon.
Then, Mr. Bean, perhaps you'll start.
But of course. Do sit down.
Please.
Now, boys and girls, 10 green bottles. Stand up. Up, up, up.
He sits down at the piano and begins to play. Two pupils exchange a smile. One of the piano legs has been sliced through. The grand piano collapses.
9 green bottles hanging on the wall.
Mr. Bean looks furious, then covers himself with a smile to the visitors, who make their exit, led by an embarrassed Mr. Wakefield.
8 green bottles hanging on the wall.
In the sports room, Miss Alcock opens one of the lockers and takes out her white shorts. She slips off her skirt and starts pulling them up, her smile turning to a frown as she struggles to get them on. After a great deal of tugging, she finally succeeds, pulling them around her waist and eventually managing to zip up the tiny shorts.
Pleased to meet you.
Miss Alcock.
Mr. Grigg.
Are you satisfied with your equipment, Miss Alcock?
Well, I've had no complaints so far. equipment. Yes, I have everything I need, thank you.
Do you find mental relaxation follows physical activity?
Oh, always.
Splendid. That's all. Thank you.
I have one more question. Do you favor the Swedish method?
Well, I always say it's the same the whole world over.
Shall we have a demonstration, Miss Alcock?
Righto. Now, hands on hips, please. Quite still. Monica, dear, don't scratch. And to the left, 2, 3. To the right, 2, 3. Forward, 2, 3. And up. Yes, a little bit sleepy by us this morning, aren't we? Monica, dear, if the elastic's broken, fall out. If not, stop fidgeting. And again. Hands on hips, please. And to the left, 2, 3. To the right, 2, 3. Forward, 2, 3. And up. Feet apart, spring. Hands above head, please. Fast forward, bend.
Mr. Grigg's eyes are popping out of his head as her tight shorts rip.
Ah, here we are. Mr. Milton's producing our school play, Romeo and Juliet, with incidental music composed by Mr. Bean.
You've arrived at a particularly interesting moment. Not entirely by accident, I dare say. We're about to have question time. Questions arising from the play, you know. You'll find, as I always do, that Shakespeare has such an ennobling effect on the young mind. But do sit down.
I do hope Miss Alcock's pants aren't ruined.
Ah, now then, boys and girls, who's first? Ah, Stevens. Robin Stevens, he's playing Romeo. Well?
Sir, we're working from the school's edition of the play.
Quite correct, but observant lad. What's your question?
Why, sir?
Why what?
Why is there a school's edition of the play?
Well, Stevens, it's like this. There are certain things in Shakespeare which young people wouldn't understand.
Such as, sir?
Be quiet, don't interrupt. I'm finished. In the school's edition, these things are cut out so that young people can concentrate on the beautiful use of the English language, which is Shakespeare's major achievement. Does that answer your question?
No, sir. Will you give us an example and see if we can understand it or not?
No, sit down, Stevens.
But, sir, I...
Sit down, Stevens. A question from someone else.
We really ought to be getting along to Mr. Adams' class.
No. This is fascinating.
Penelope Lee. She's playing Juliet.
Would you care to leave now, Miss Wheeler? Mr. Grigg can join us later.
No, thank you.
Act one, scene five, sir.
Oh, your sweet little scene with the nurse, yes.
Go ask his name. If he be married, my grave is like to be my wedding bed.
Well, what's your question?
What's a wedding bed?
What do you mean, what's a wedding bed?
Well, what's it like? What's special about a wedding bed?
Really, dear, I don't see what that's got to do with Romeo and Juliet.
Oh, hell of a lot if you ask me.
Nobody did ask you, Atkins. Be quiet. I don't think that point's of any great importance, dear.
Oh, but, sir, I have to say it. And I must understand what I say on the stage.
I'll cut the speech.
Yeah, well, we must left it a play at this rate.
Blooming good job, too.
Pat, Atkins, be quiet.
About this bed?
Wedding beds are bigger.
Why?
They just are. It's a custom.
No. Really? My dad's got a book. Marriage customs throughout history.
I'm not interested in your dad's marriage customs. His book, I mean.
Sir, mustn't you sleep in a big bed if you're not married?
Or in a small bed if you are.
That's quite enough about beds. Next question. Yes, Irene?
It says in the play Juliet was 14.
Correct. Next question.
She was some teenager.
That's not a question.
Give us a chance. My question is...
Why wasn't we born in Shakespeare's time? Cool.
Atkins.
Why wasn't she up before the bee?
The beak?
Magistrate, juvenile court, you know. I mean, look what she did, and at 14.
This all happened a long time ago.
And in Italy.
Oh, exactly. What do you mean?
Didn't you know, sir? Girls in Italy sort of earlier. Something to do with the climate.
Not only in Italy, there's a girl down our street.
I'm not interested in the girl down your street.
Well, you're in a minority. Only last Saturday night...
Be quiet. This has nothing to do with Romeo and Juliet.
Oh, but it has, sir. She's 14.
Who? The girl down our street. Now stop this.
I think I know the girl you mean.
You would.
Be quiet, quiet. I'm not going to answer any more questions.
Ah, sir. Oh, sir. Sir. Please, sir.
Shut up. All of you. Did you hear what I said?
Yes, sir.
Then why is your hand up?
Oh, sir.
Oh, very well. Cut along, then. The rest of you, get out your grammar books. Miss Wheeler, I'm terribly sorry. I don't know what got into them.
I do. Adolescent curiosity, logically focused, superb research material. I couldn't be more pleased if I tried.
Mr. Milton, do they often rag you like this?
Oh, no, most unusual.
I see. Nothing personal, Mr. Wakefield, but I often find that when the real headmaster is absent, the children seem to sense that there is...
No, not at all. I can't understand it.
Mr. Wakefield gives him a frustrated look as they walk out. Once they've gone, Milton surveys the class angrily.
Now then, Stevens?
A male and female pupil enter the empty science lab, where what looks like a space rocket is on the teacher's desk. The boy opens a flap on the side and inserts a silver cartridge.
It connects.
Hope it works.
Well, of course it'll work. Excuse me, but not today.
We were just looking at it, sir.
Well, I'm very, very pleased to see you taking such an interest. Right now, to your places. Well, the actual shape is designed to combat all the atmospheric pressures and other difficulties that I've already explained. Here.
Please don't stop, Mr. Adams.
Thank you, sir. As I told you, the rocket is a working model. And in a day or so, I hope to arrange an outing to a suitable open space where we will launch it.
Miss Wheeler gives him an amorous smile. Adams looks embarrassed.
Settle down now, please. I can hardly wait for that moment. When I place the final component necessary electronically to activate the rocket in here. Then I shall check the directional fins, the dispensable boosters, the streamlined acorn cap, and then a touch to this button and away. Isn't it extraordinary, boys and girls, that this little button here, absolutely harmless now...
It blasts off in a cloud of smoke, throwing Adams to the floor. It soars up through the classroom ceiling in a shower of dust and plaster. Alf peers down through the hole.
Who did that? Who done it?
English literature. Ennobling. It's about as ennobling as a spring night in Port Said.
They were all I had on.
My piano. Oh, my piano. Thank you, lucky stars, they didn't visit your class.
Oh, they're welcome. I have very little trouble.
Don't depend on it.
On what?
The cane. You can't send him upstairs anymore.
Oh, so you're seeing sense at last. A few good whackings.
Oh, really, Grace. This isn't just aimless mischief. Oh. It's planned, coordinated, timed.
I'll say it's timed. The second I bent forward.
Oh, for goodness sakes, Ella. Don't go on about your stupid shorts.
You haven't seen the hole in them.
I have no wish to, thank you. What are a pair of torn shorts beside my piano? My beautiful, wrecked piano.
Does that mean you won't be able to finish composing the music for the play?
Real composers don't require pianos. It is all in the mind.
Best place for it.
You've never wanted my music, have you?
Well, Tchaikovsky would have done me if I'd had to have music at all. Personally, I...
Out with it. What's your objection? Come on, let's have all of it. Come on, let's have it.
All right. It's already my Herculean task to coax anything like audibility from these children. If, in addition, I have to cope with an orchestra that makes a lullaby sound like the climax to 1812.
You can hear a pin drop during their quiet passages.
And I'd rather.
A pin wouldn't have made any difference. They'd still have split.
Sarah, constant reference to those shorts won't get us to the bottom of this trouble.
Do you mind?
I demand an apology.
Oh, very well. I'm sorry that I ever agreed to have your wretched music in the first place.
Oh, I've got it. I think I've got it.
But what?
The answer. The reason for the mischief.
By scientific analysis, I suppose.
Look, it's quite simple. One, the kids know the guineas, pigs, for Wig and Greeler. Grig and Wheeler. Two, they resent it. Ergo, three, they aim to chase them from the premises.
They wouldn't dare if caning was still in force.
Don't you see? Look, that's just their good luck. It's not their motive.
That makes sense to me.
And I agree with the kids. The sooner that psychiatric simpleton leaves, the better.
Well, he can't leave. He mustn't. Well, what I mean is, if Mr. Adams is right, I mean, it'd be fatal if for what little discipline we have got, if the children succeeded. Wouldn't it?
Oh, absolutely, Sarah. They mustn't get away with it.
There's next term to live through.
Oh, Grig and Wheeler must stay. But how are we going to live through the rest of the week?
But you mustn't apologize, Mr. Wakefield. No, no, no. What I saw this morning is a complete vindication of my theory. The practical jokes are the most valuable pointers to the inner conflict of childhood.
You don't say.
Take one example. The gym shorts. It's all in my last book.
Your last book?
I'd love to read that. Oh, people say it's the nearest thing in the English language to my dear old Viennese professor's famous essay. Mit dem Aussehen der Kleiner stirbt sich das Kind eine Pass ins Glückhaus. Flinging off clothes is a child's passport to happiness. Ah, dear Professor Schmarrow, how his eyes would have lit up to have seen those pants split.
I take it you don't altogether agree, Miss Wheeler.
Mr. Grigg and I have long since agreed to differ.
Perhaps we can all agree on this at any rate, that it would be a poor thing for education if school teachers couldn't take a practical joke in the right spirit, eh?
Oh, certainly.
Shall we continue our tour?
They all start to get up, but find they can't. They're stuck to their chairs with glue. They try to put a brave face on it as they attempt to unstick themselves.
Jolly fun, what?
Miss Alcock's walking along a school corridor when Grace stops her.
What's up?
Had a school lunch, girl.
Oh, all right, but it's always exhausting to supervise it. I'd like to get my feet up.
Well, I've been thinking about what Mr. Bean said. You know, find the ringleaders. Mm-hmm. Now, suppose we keep our eyes peeled. Go out on patrol, as it were. Think what a triumph it would be if two women brought in the ringleaders.
Rattling good idea.
Come on, then. Casually now.
They enter the school hall where pupils are milling around. Grace spots a group of boys in a huddle.
That Atkins boy. I've suspected him from the start. Look, carefully. Over there by the radiator.
Maybe they're interfering with the heating system.
That way, quick.
They dash out of the hall along a corridor and into another room where a group of boys are playing cards.
Now then, boys, what are you doing?
Hello, miss.
Well, I don't know about the rest, but Atkins will never be able to bluff with a hand like that.
Come on.
In a corridor, a group of boys pretend to be studying a school notice board. When they walk off, they've left pictures of scantily clad women stuck to it. Mr. Wakefield comes walking past and stops in his tracks.
Hodgson!
Yes, sir?
Strip the board!
Strip the...
Strip!
Oh.
Ah. Mit dem außen Bekleider. Stell sich das Kind. Einen Pass ins Glückhaus.
With a knowing smile, Grig walks off, leaving Alf bemused. As he removes the pictures, one of them catches his eye.
I don't believe it.
The pupils all stand as the formidable-looking Grace enters her classroom.
All right, sit down. There's been some trouble this morning. There isn't going to be any trouble in my classes. The first one of you to talk or move out of turn or in any way disrupt... Atkins. What's that?
Your hand, miss.
Right. What size is it?
Outsize?
Smack size. Do I make myself clear?
Yes, miss.
Spend a quiet, pleasant lesson considering some of the knottier problems presented by fractions and decimals. Or else. Page 45.
Ah, Miss Short. Excuse me, won't you? But I'd like to conduct a little experiment on logic.
Certainly.
Thank you.
Pay attention to Mr. Grigg.
Now, children, I'd like you to call out any two-figure numbers. Now, who's first?
27.
49.
He's writing the numbers the wrong way round on the blackboard, throwing Grace a conspiratorial smile.
They're puzzled.
So am I.
Wait. The experiment never fails. Someone always questions my actions. And that someone is the logical element in the group, you see.
81.
65.
65? 33. Go on in. Muck about with that.
Oh. Ah, come in. Hi, Adams. So prompt.
Very glad to see you.
Thank you.
Make yourself comfortable. Sit down. The chairs are quite safe now.
Safe, sir?
Shh. Keep your voice down. There's a good chap. Well, Mr. Adams, after this morning, I doubt if I could get a job seeing children across a busy street, let alone a headmastership.
Well, I must say, sir, you don't seem to be at all worried by it.
Why should I be? I'm not. The solution is in this very room.
Well, I'm afraid I don't quite see.
Please, keep it down.
Sorry, sir.
Now, Adams, let's analyze this scientifically.
Hmm? Yeah, yes.
If at the end of this week, Miss Wheeler presents her report, then I can't possibly hope to get the job I want. That's the problem, right?
Right, yes.
The solution is simple. Miss Wheeler must be mellowed.
Mellowed?
What makes a woman mellow, Mr. Adams? What takes her mind off her work? Love, Mr. Adams.
Why are you telling me all this, Mr. Wake?
Because the solution is in this very room. You, Mr. Adams, you are the solution.
Mason?
Please, please, keep your voice down, old chap. For sake. She's using the next room as her study.
Yeah, but I...
Mr. Adams. Miss Wheeler is in love with you.
No, please.
Oh, yes. I saw it this morning. In the lab.
Oh, no, please.
The signs were unmistakable.
No.
She yearns for you.
Oh, no, please. I can't. It's part possible, sir.
No, not only possible. It's possible. In fact, it's certain.
Look, sir, how do you know this? I mean, after all, sir, you're a bachelor.
But I'm not dead. Gregory, I'm not just thinking of myself. Take pity on that poor, frustrated woman in there. Show her a little response, a little tenderness, a little love. It's nothing more or less than your simple duty as a human being.
Look, sir, you know me. I'd do anything in the world to help you, sir. You moan knees. Tell me, I bet. Wouldn't know what to do, sir.
You wouldn't. In that new school, there are 3 laboratories, all slap bang up to date. I will require the services of a senior and loyal science master.
3? Well, I just have to have a little time for thought.
There is no time for thought. Only action.
Three? For you, sir, and for science. I'll do my utmost.
Good man. Well done, Adams. Oh, I knew I could depend on you.
Ah, Sonnets of Shakespeare. Those lips that love's own hand did make. Oh, dear. Little love god lying once asleep. My mistress' eyes are nothing like the sun.
Let me distract you, Mr. Adams. I'm just doing a bit of research.
Oh, so am I.
I always inspect a school library thoroughly.
Oh, it's very revealing, I'm sure.
As she examines the shelves, he consults his poetry book standing behind her.
Nothing.
He sits down at a desk and she sits opposite him, browsing one of the books. He flicks through the poetry book and finds the page he wants, screwing up the courage to speak.
Miss Wheeler, I have something to say to you.
Yes?
The light makes your hair look like burnished gold. Your eyes twinkle like the stars in your eyes. The sky, scars.
What suddenly makes you say that?
Scientists, you see. I observe these things, and I hope you don't mind.
Why should I?
Well,
But I didn't want you to think I was being personal.
Aren't you?
Oh, no. Well, just scientific.
Oh. Oh, well, of course, in that case, I don't mind at all.
Good. Miss Wheeler! Miss Wheeler, there is something I must say to you. Miss Wheeler.
Oh, you've fallen.
Yes, Miss Wheeler. That's it. I have. Miss Wheeler, I've fallen in. Fallen in through the hole of the chair.
Mr. Lawrence catches up with Adams in a corridor.
Well?
Adams shakes his head gloomily. They hear the noise of Miss Wheeler typing furiously in a nearby office and share a despondent look. Grig walks in through the school gates, kicking away a stray football with a relaxed smile. He straightens himself up when he sees Miss Alcock standing at the school entrance.
Good morning, Miss Alcock.
Good morning, Mr. Grig.
I'd like to, have a long chat with you sometime.
What about?
Physical exercise.
Oh, but of course, sir. We were told to give you all possible cooperation.
I shan't ask the impossible. Sometime today?
Oh, yes.
Oh, good air. Oh, I almost forgot. I've got something for you.
You have, Mr. Grig?
Yes. My latest. I thought you might be interested. It's rather advanced.
Well, that doesn't surprise me. You're rather a forward sort of chap all round.
I don't believe in repressing natural instincts. It's very unhealthy.
Oh, sick-making. I do agree.
I look forward to our little chat, then. See you later.
Bye. Thanks for the book.
Miss Alcock blows the whistle for the end of break, but no sound comes out.
On the pee.
In the chemistry lab, one of the saboteurs takes a bottle marked alcohol and uses a funnel to pour some of it into a smaller bottle. He hands the first bottle to another boy.
You'd better top it up.
Stevens is standing outside the staff room and gives the all clear to one of the boys who creeps in and pours the alcohol into the spout of the kettle. Miss Alcock's making a pot of tea.
Oh, let me get this clear, Johann Sebastian Bean. You want to stop the recitation of the prologue while you play 5 minutes music.
The star-crossed lovers theme is vital to my integrated musical interpretation.
And what, may I ask, does the actor do all this time? Tap dance?
He could toy with his dirk.
Or he could chuck it at you.
There is no need to be offensive. Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you, Sarah. May I remind you that music is supposed to be incidental, not dominant?
Thank you, Sarah. Mr. Milton.
Oh, shut up, Adams. This is a crisis.
Yes, I know.
Shut up.
Please, gentlemen. I'm making out the lighting.
Oh, all I want you to do there is dazzle his tone-deaf so-called orchestra. So they can't read that entirely superfluous so-called music.
Superfluous? It'll be the making of the production.
Poppycock. The play is the thing.
I will not yield a note.
And I will not sacrifice the inspired verbal music of Shakespeare for your dreary dirges.
Dirges?
Dreary dirges.
Withdraw that remark.
Never.
I shall be forced to strike you.
You do, and I'll break your batten.
Now, you two, sit down and drink your tea.
Yes, it's getting cold while you're getting hot.
Ho, ho.
Drink up, you two, for goodness sake. Grown men wasting a free period squabbling.
They all take a sip of their tea, with looks of surprise and appreciation at the taste.
I say, Sarah, do you think I might possibly have another cup?
In the corridor.
Going my way?
Possibly. I'm going to check up on some facts.
With Mr. Adams?
Yes, as it happens.
I see.
There's nothing to see.
I'm a psychiatrist, you know.
You forget yourself, Mr. Grigg.
Bye, school teacher. All without a care. Bye, school teacher. Happy holiday hour. Happy fun school teacher. Dial by the chair. Happy fun school teacher. All without a care.
Mr. Grigg and Miss Wheeler listen at the staff room door, puzzled.
You're drunk!
Put your hands up!
Miss Alcock!
Or I'll flatten you out like a carpet, you slanderous cat!
She punches Grigg by mistake, sending him flying out of the door just as Mr. Wakefield comes in.
Miss Alcock!
In the sports room, Grigg enters to find Miss Alcock sound asleep, lying on her back with a flannel draped over her forehead. He kneels down beside her and gently removes the flannel. She smiles as he does so. She opens her eyes and realizes Grigg's next to her.
What are you doing here?
You were dreaming about me.
Well, I can't help my dreams.
I can. Help them to come true.
Mr. Grigg.
That's a retrogressive step. You called me Alistair just now.
Well, I'm not myself. Don't confuse me.
There's no confusion. They happen to be my dreams, too.
Alistair.
Sarah.
They kiss.
Oh, Sarah, I knew you were for me. The moment, the magic moment when our eyes first met. Flamed, sparked.
Oh, you mad fool.
Oh, I say, steady on.
Don't worry, darling. I've studied judo. I know every muscle in the human body. Alistair.
No, wait.
Did I hurt you, darling?
No. We must meet tonight.
Oh, I can't. I do the Women's League of Health and Beauty Tuesdays.
Tomorrow night.
Till then.
Oh, my darling.
He blows her kisses as he goes to leave, but then opens the storeroom door by mistake and is showered with tennis rackets.
Now, look here, William Wakefield. You'll get nowhere by wheedling and whining. Be firm with her. My staff, Miss Wheeler, is not in the habit of being drunk on duty. The explanation is quite simple. Some alcohol from the laboratory found its way into the staff room kettle. It happens all the time. No. These things happen. Satisfied? No. I don't blame you. What am I to tell her? Ah, Mr. Adams, my dear fellow. You have news for me.
Yes. No. She sent for me.
Heaven be praised. You've made an impact. Ah, I see it all. She only pretends she wants to see you for a staff interview. Routine. When all the time...
No, sir. I'm sorry, sir. Look, I just can't do it. Don't realize, sir, what this takes out of me.
But, Adams, you're on the threshold of three laboratories.
Sorry, sir. Just can't do it. Not even if you gave me Harwell, sir. You've got to go in there, please. Make some excuse for me, sir. I just can't do it. Get me out of it, please.
How can I explain after that bacchanalia this morning? I'm in balk. Your ball's in play.
But there's nothing but bank mail. Black, moral blank mail, sir.
Let's face it, Adams. This is plain, straightforward blackmail.
Three labs.
Get in there. Come on, man. Come on, Adams, there's a good chap.
He grabs Adams' fist and knocks on the office door with it, then shoves him inside.
Sit down, please. Now, Mr. Adams, just a few questions.
Yes.
I understand you built that rocket alone.
Yes, oh yes, yes.
And that you also constructed the lighting console for the school play.
Yes. Just a little job I knocked up.
You obviously devote a great deal of your spare time to school projects.
Yes. You keep me occupied in the evenings.
Fully?
Fully.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Did I startle you?
No. No.
You're surely not intimidated by inspectors. We're not such ogres, you know. At least, I hope I'm not.
Thank you very much. Well, Miss Wheeler, have you any further questions you'd like to ask?
No.
Thank you.
Oh, just a minute. I always give the teachers an opportunity to question me on ministry policy. Or anything. Anything.
Miss Wheeler, there is something I wanted. Not to ask, but to tell you. Something that has been nagging at me. Nagging at me. So much so, in fact, that I have hardly been able to concentrate on what you were saying because of it. Miss Wheeler. I've hardly been able to take my eyes off you. I hope you don't think I'm being personal. Or, presuming too much. But, Miss Wheeler. There is something I want to tell you. You've got a nose on your face. Oh, you smart. You smart!
In a blind panic, he tears out of the office, passing Mr. Wakefield at his desk outside. Miss Wheeler's now typing away. Stevens and three of the saboteurs hurry up to the school gates, one of them carrying a bag. They climb over the gates and hurry inside.
What sort of a morning have you had?
Did you ask? Exceptionally quiet.
Uh-huh. Took my advice, eh? There's no doubt about it. Firmness pays.
Miss Short, Milton, something wonderful's happened.
What?
Nothing. Nothing. That's just it. Isn't it marvellous? I've taken two classes this morning and nothing's happened. Just honest to goodness teaching. That's all. God. I've never felt so happy.
No, we are a happy lot this morning.
The girls, they're so cooperative. I've never known anything like it.
What a change in the children. It's just like a miracle.
You two, too.
Tut, tut. Such clumsy phrasing.
You two, too. Oh, tut, tut.
It's been marvellous.
Not a prank all morning.
Well, trouble's over. Back to normal.
I say, just a minute. They might be lulling us into a false sense of security.
Oh, nonsense. It's because we've been firm. That's what's done it. I always maintain.
Thank you, and good night. I'm trying to work on an idea for the crypt scene.
Oh, creep off.
Excuse me, I've got to take a phone telephone.
Well, it's wonderful to think that all our troubles are over.
Is this some...
Help him up!
Some idea of a practical joke. Oh, good grief, I might have hurt my spine. Right. Well, it's so ridiculous. Oh. Fred.
There was a horn under the cushion as Miss Alcock sat down.
Ah. Trouble's over, eh?
Please. I say, no. Put peace polish all over the earboot of the piece of the telephone. Oh, no. What's this? Yeah. Look, it's stuck. Get off. It's a dirty little former's look.
Firmness pays, does it?
I am going to report this to Mr. Wakefield.
He falls through a hole in the floor.
My goodness, come here.
Oh, look out!
With Milton behind him, Adams falls backwards. Bags of white flour topple on top of them.
Are you all right, Adams? A ridiculous practical jokes.
I'm going to Mr. Wakefield. Oh! I'm going to insist.
The doorknob electrocutes her.
What on earth's going on in there?
Mr. Wakefield grips the doorknob too on the other side. Miss Wheeler comes out of her office to see him convulsing. She looks horrified. As he's writing something on the notice board. Now she's standing behind him.
What are you doing here, Stevens?
Running an errand, miss.
Well, run.
Yes, miss.
He watches from the top of the stairs as she inspects what he's written. He looks worried as she removes the piece of paper and strides off with it.
You see, sir, these six children want to attend the exhibition. Only when they know that Grigg and Wheeler will be there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, don't you see, sir? They are the ringleaders.
Mm. Seizing this opportunity to make trouble wherever Grigg and Miss Wheeler may be. An alert, ingenious deduction, Miss Short, but not proof.
We'll watch them, get proof, and then six of the best apiece.
I don't like caning, you know that. And I like spying even less.
It's the only way. Leave it to me. I'll arrange everything.
What did I tell you? They're on to us. They'll be watching us now.
That blooming notice. Oh, that's that. All operations cancelled?
No. Good generals take advantage of setbacks. Turn them into victories. Now that's what we'll do.
Mr. Wakefield's sitting at his desk, writing.
I wish to apply for the post of headmaster.
Miss Wheeler walks up to the door of her office, gingerly touching the doorknob first to check it. Then, as she goes to open it, the whole door falls inwards. Hearing her scream, followed by the sound of typing, Mr. Wakefield screws up what he was writing. Miss Alcock's reading Grigg's book.
Sarah. Sarah, my darling.
It's all over.
Over? But last night...
Excuse me, please. I want to leave the room.
Sarah, darling, what have I done?
This.
That? That's changed your feelings towards me?
Do you think I, a working teacher, could give my heart to the author of this treacherous tripe, this stab in the back to the entire profession?
How dare you? I studied in Vienna.
And I teach here. This is all mushy theory. I know children.
You know? What do you know? You know it's easier to stand in the path of progress than meet new ideas halfway. God, you're talking just like an ignorant, Victorian, muscle-bound governess.
I'd rather be that than a namby-pamby, starry-eyed, head-shrinking twerp.
Oh, you listen to me. No, I... Sarah, we're arguing.
What a brilliant analysis.
We mustn't argue. No, Sarah, let's...
Let's nothing. It's all over.
Over? But, darling, I love you. What am I going to do?
See chapter 5.
Chapter 5?
Oh. Outside the door, she looks regretful, passing Miss Wheeler on her way in.
What's the matter with Miss Alcock? She looks very distressed.
Mr. Gregg!
He was using a pair of knickers as a hanky.
I found them in my pocket.
In the school corridor.
All set, note to do this break?
Operation War of Nerves.
Okay, now watch your timing. Scatter.
Right now. You all know what to do.
Watch the suspects during this break.
Take them to Wakefield if we spot anything suspicious.
Well, you might sound a little keener. This time, the search has narrowed down. We know who to watch. Those six.
Well, I'd plan something else during this break.
Me too. Music doesn't write itself, you know.
Oh, well, really, you might be a little more cooperative. I promise, Mr. Wakefield. I can't be expected to watch six children all by myself.
All right, we'll do our best. It's a waste of time.
Adams enters the empty science lab, checking the area. He walks around, hands in pockets, pausing to sniff a large bottle of solution, then wincing at the smell. He dashes into a back room, just as a boy's climbing out of the window.
Toluene? Nitric acid? Is that up to TNT?
Mr. Wakefield!
Excuse me, sir. Can you give us a book on terrorism?
Yes. Bangs that made history.
Thank you, sir.
Terrorism? Those two?
In a corridor, Adams is speechless with shock.
But what is it?
A bomb. They're baking a bomb.
I know.
Milton!
Oh, don't do that.
I've just heard Haig and Dale plotting an explosion.
Same here. Lee and Gordon.
Oh, come on.
All right.
Bean enters his classroom and sits down at the piano.
I'm not going to waste my time.
Outside the classroom window.
It's only my do-it-yourself book. How to make a bomb. Take a container, detonator, sulfur, potassium nitrate and carbon. Anyone can make gunpowder. You'll see.
I can't wait.
Mr. Wakefield!
She saw us all right.
Good.
Now, girls, you know you're not allowed in classrooms during break.
The two girls climb out of the classroom window, leaving behind a book.
Bombs?
Why were you out of bounds in the stores room, Bird?
Ask Mr. Adams, sir.
Why ask me?
You know I'm interested in science, sir. I was just looking around.
And the disturbed bottles?
Just reading the label, sir.
Did you remove any of the contents?
Why should I do that, sir?
To make a bomb.
Is Mr. Adams feeling all right, sir?
Bird, tell the truth.
I am, sir. Look, why doesn't Mr. Adams check the bottles?
Check?
Yes, you'll not find anything missing.
Have you done that, Mr. Adams?
Well, no, sir. You see, I
have... Kindly do so at once.
Yes, Mr. Wakefield.
Wait in the next room, Bird.
Yes, sir.
As he walks into the room, Bird checks his watch.
Why did you borrow this book?
Just for private study, sir. We're doing modern history, sir. That's full of bangs.
Why were you in a classroom during break?
To get a bit of peace and quiet, sir, to read the book. Why didn't you explain before running away? Well, miss, there's been so much bad behavior just lately, we thought we'd be made an example of.
Where's the bomb?
The what, miss?
The bomb.
Bomb, bomb, bomb.
Bomb, bomb, bomb.
Wait in the next room. Come in. What's all this about, sir? You and Sheila were discussing the making of gunpowder.
That's right, sir.
For Guy Fawkes Day.
That's not for months.
Well, we're always being told to plan ahead.
It won't work, Haig.
It will. There's full instructions in this book.
I'm not talking about fireworks.
Oh, I am.
We seem to be at cross purposes here.
We do indeed. Now keep quiet and listen. Your excuse is flimsy in the extreme, considering...
Considering there's no smoke without fire.
Excuse me, miss, but that's the daftest proverb going. I mean, sometimes there's whacking great clouds of smoke without so much as a spark.
It all depends on what you want to believe.
Now, take propaganda.
Haig, Sheila, wait in the next room. Well?
Could we possibly be mistaken, all of us?
No. Wait till Stevens is rounded up. He's the real ringleader. You'll see.
Will we? Or will we learn from children that quite often, and I quote, there's whacking great clouds of smoke without so much as a spark, unquote.
Haig was listening at the door and nods to the others. In the corridor, Stevens checks his watch and hides himself as Bean comes along. He waits for him to pass, then charges by him, running at full pelt. Bean follows him into the cloakroom. He creeps in, listening. He walks around the coat racks. Then, it suddenly dawns on him.
A time bomb!
Stevens is watching him, sniggering. He follows the noise to one of the bags, reaching inside it. As Bean cowers on the floor, Stevens calmly walks out from his hiding place, takes out an alarm clock from one of the coat pockets, and switches it off. Then, with a glance down at Bean, he walks off.
Sarah, where are the extra chairs?
I wouldn't be surprised if the little darlings were chopping them up for a bonfire.
Charming.
I better check.
Come on, back up, you lot. We'll never get the curtain up at this rate. Miss Alcock.
Please go away. I'm very busy.
You've got to listen. I got the whole thing analysed.
Take your hands off me, Mr. Grigg. You know I've studied judo.
I love you, and you love me. But because this has happened so quickly, you feel robbed of the exquisite tensions of courtship.
Let go.
Your rejection of me is just an elaborate psychic ruse to provoke the ritual of courtship. But, oh, Sarah, it's too late for that now. Our love is too certain. You know I'm right. Don't try and shift me.
She throws him to the floor.
Come along, children. Stop larking about.
But I love you, Miss Alcock.
Bird and one of the female saboteurs approach a door. Behind her back, she's holding a packet of itching powder. Adams walks purposefully along the corridor to Miss Wheeler's office, knocks and walks in.
Mr. Adams!
Miss Wheeler, I want to talk to you.
Right now?
Right now. Sit down, please.
But there's a meeting.
Sit down. Miss Wheeler, I've worked the whole thing out scientifically.
Mr. Adams, whatever are you talking about?
Us.
Us?
Miss Wheeler, I love you.
Do you?
Don't question the facts, please. It's most unscientific.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I dare say, though, you'd like to know the background to this fact.
If you don't mind.
Of course. During the last few days, I have attempted to pay court, I believe that's a correct term, to pay court to you. These attempts, for reasons I shall explain later, were not genuinely based. Therefore, they failed. I escaped in confusion, resolved never to attempt the experiment again. After the last attempt, however, an extraordinary reaction set in. Far from never wanting to see you again, I was progressively gripped by a panic that I wouldn't ever be alone with you again. And I wanted to be with you. A hard, aching want. So here I am. Well, that is the background to the fact I mentioned to you just now, Miss Wheeler. The fact that after an uncertain and wrong beginning, I have now actually fallen in love with you, Miss Wheeler. I must have done to feel the way I feel now. How do you feel?
Your collar's frayed. There's a button missing on your jacket and your hair wants cutting. You need looking after. I'd like to do that.
Oh, Felicity.
He kisses her.
May I hold you?
It's necessary, scientifically.
They share a lingering kiss.
Marry me.
She nods, smiling.
I didn't muddle one phrase, did I?
Well, you couldn't very well muddle that last one. Thank goodness.
Felicity, there's something I've got to tell you. Explain. I must confess.
Later. We really must go to that meeting.
The logical, I mean, not with the underlying people.
Well, I understand it. Your attitude is not objective.
Ladies, gentlemen, this meeting has been called at the urgent request of Mr. Grigg. Now, there's very little time before the school play performance, so without further ado, Mr. Grigg.
Thank you. I leave Maudlin Street tomorrow with my research work incomplete. It's obvious, I think, that 4 days is woefully inadequate in which to study the phenomenon of behavior patterns at this school. That's where you come in. You five teachers who seem to have been at the center of the week's events. I propose to consult with you all at length during the school halls to draw on your experience and your opinions. After all, you know the children. You're here all the time as practicing teachers. To start with, however, I'd be grateful for your preliminary thoughts here and now.
Everyone's scratching themselves.
That doesn't mean, of course, that I haven't a preliminary theory of my own. Your imperturbable acting headmaster doesn't altogether agree with me, but it's my belief. We're witnessing a mass juvenile hysteria. Unknown since the children's crusades. The Middle Ages.
Ooh. Thank you, Mr. Grigg. Before throwing this open to the meeting, I'd like to make my position clear. The essence of hysteria is, in my view, that it's sustained. Continuous. Here, it's been spasmodic. For example, since this morning's bomb hoax, things have been quiet, free from irritation for all of us. Miss Alcock, you wish to make your views known?
Physical exercise. That's the answer. There's nothing like it for working off potentially dangerous surplus energy. It's all in the spine, you know.
Oh, yes, all right.
There's a wonderful new exercise I'll show you.
She rubs her back against the wall, trying to relieve the itching.
Oh, that looks wonderful. May I join you?
Oh, be my guest.
He shimmies up and down the wall, scratching his leg.
Milton, haven't you something to say?
As I see it, sir, the woeful lack of extracurricular intellectual activity is causative in this matter. Mock parliaments, debating societies. It's intellectual stimulation of this kind that's required to satisfy the juvenile itch. Shut up, you jackass.
Sorry, I can't help it. You see, I get all...
Mr. Bean!
You and your psychiatry is short. The bar lamps have drenched your very room in itching powder.
How does he analyze that?
Scratch my back, please.
Never. You suffer.
They're all doing a conga in a circle around the office, each one scratching the back of the person in front. Pupils and parents are streaming into school. Sitting in the front row of the hall next to Grig, Mr. Wakefield consults his programme for the performance of Romeo and Juliet, privately crossing his fingers. Bean's conducting the school orchestra. He gives Mr. Wakefield a proud smile. Looking pleased with himself, Bean makes a sweeping gesture to a boy who bangs a drum. Adams and Miss Wheeler are by a control desk.
If music be the food of love, belt up.
All right, now this is the biggest operation so far. Now make it good, that's all.
Bean's still grinning at Mr. Wakefield, grandstanding as he conducts the orchestra. While Adams and Miss Wheeler share a snog, one of the saboteurs flicks a switch on the control panel to raise the curtain. It lifts up to reveal Milton painting the scenery. He spins around in horror, covering Bean in white paint.
Get off, get off!
Put the curtains up!
Get off!
This is my bit, you get off!
Don't you tell me how to do it!
He falls down a trap door.
Two assholes, both alike in dignity.
Shut up!
Come on! In fair Verona, where we now are seen, where civil blood makes civil hands unclean.
Oh, can't you follow a cue sheet? It's simple enough. What a start! What a start!
That's better. From forth the fatal loins of these two foes, a pair of star-crossed lovers take their life.
Milton, I never touched the switch.
Did you?
I know.
Don't talk to Felicity like that.
Oh, so it's Felicity now, is it? Oh, now I understand.
Understand what?
What you were touching at the time.
How would you like a punch on the nose, Sir Lawrence?
Shh, the play!
Shut up, will you?
Don't you talk to me like that. I shouldn't be here. I'm going.
You stay where you are. Look.
The music. That flaming theme.
Toy with your dagger, eh? Toy with the blade.
Sorry, can't hear you, Mr. Milton. Excuse me.
Go back, go back.
Well, make up your mind, do.
But soft, what light through yonder window breaks? It is the east and Juliet the sun.
Oh, Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou, Romeo? Oh, sorry.
It's all right, Carrigal.
Deny thy father and refuse thy name, or if thou wilt not be but sworn my love, and I'll no longer be a Capulet.
Well, come on, is anyone going to help me?
No. No.
Stand still. Oh, Daddy, you're pulling me.
To you, that's it.
You're pulling me.
Do I have to wait up here all night?
Juliet did, so wilt thou belt up?
Oh, water, brandy.
Oh! Oh, tar.
Tar? After all I've taught them.
That's all right.
Glad to help.
Now, where were we?
And I'll no longer be a Capulet.
Oh, shall I hear more or shall I speak at this?
Milton faints. As Adams and Miss Wheeler try to revive him, one of the saboteurs swaps the plugs round on the control panel.
Go hence to have more talk of these sad things. Some shall be pardoned and some punished. For never was a story of more woe than this of Juliet and her Romeo.
Careful! The curtain down.
Adams flicks a switch and the performers are drenched by torrential rain.
The wires must be crossed!
Turn it down, pull it down, burn it down!
I'm afraid you've experienced a slight technical
hitch! But I'm sure, if you bear with us for a moment, it seems the two wires have become crossed. And I wish I were dead. Bean! Milton! No! Mr. Wayne! Reveal! Mr. Wayne!
Daytime. Greek strolls up to the school gates. Mr. Wakefield quietly enters the school hall, where he discovers Stevens and the other saboteurs busy working at something on the stage.
You're getting overconfident. Nobody on watch. Let's see what you have in store for end-of-term prize-giving, shall we? Same trick as before. Your inventiveness is flagging. Itching powder? Again? You are repeating yourselves. I suppose the piano is rigged to collapse during the school song, hmm? Flour? Again? Couldn't you have found some soot just for a change? You will dismantle these amusing tricks at once. In 20 years, I have never punished anyone on the last day of term. But you boys will report to me immediately after prize giving. Clear.
Take them down. Come on, let's clear up.
Haven't you anything to say for yourselves?
They shake their heads. He picks up the cane from his bookshelf and stands facing them, brandishing it, but with a reluctant expression.
Stevens?
Sir, wait, wait! It's all a mistake, sir.
I'll do you.
Thanks to Penelope's common sense in approaching me.
Don't listen to her, sir.
Be quiet, Stevens.
Miss Short, what did Penelope say to justify this intrusion?
She has told me, sir, the reason for this week's untoward events. Mr. Wakefield, these children discovered you were planning to leave. They don't want you to leave. It's as simple as that. They feel, as does the entire school, that Magdalen Street wouldn't be the same without you. They thought of getting up a petition, but decided that wasn't certain to succeed. Besides, such an action was considered by them to be soft, not the Magdalen Street way. So, with all the circumstances in their favor, they decided to make sure you would never obtain a post anywhere else and launched their campaign to that end, with the whole school behind them. You may wish to proceed with punishing these boys. Personally, I would count my years in the profession well spent if they'd do half as much to make me stay among them.
Mr. Wakefield looks moved. He walks to the window and looks out. Grace gestures for the pupils to leave the office, and they silently file out. With an affectionate look in Mr. Wakefield's direction as he stands with his back to her, Grace follows them.
Now I know there's something to child psychiatry. Oh, I do love you.
Oh, there.
But if any of our kids deserve a thick ear, they get it, right?
Of course. Well, oh, just between you and me, I realized long ago that free expression is just the thing for other people's children.
All the pupils are gathered in the playground below Mr. Wakefield's office window as he puts down the cane and takes off his gown. He draws back the curtains and looks down. Mr. Wakefield takes his coat and hat and walks out of the office and downstairs. He passes through waiting teachers and staff as he heads for the school entrance and the crowds of chanting pupils outside.
Have a good holiday, all of you. See you next term.
Everyone jumps up and down with delight. Grig kisses Miss Alcock, and Miss Wheeler kisses Adams. Milton kisses Bean by mistake, who slaps his face. Mr. Wakefield walks through the cheering children, shakes Alf by the hand at the gates, then turns to give them all a big wave.